Welcome to Cryptic Picnic, a podcast where cozy conversations unfold over episodes of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Hosted by two ghouls and former co-workers turned long-distance friends, Cryptid Picnic is sure to satisfy your appetite for the strange and peculiar. Happy May Day, everyone. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to Cryptic Picnic. I am your co-host, Ivy. And
I,
dancing on the screen in front of me, is...
I'm like, oh, we're going to talk about court today. Ay, that's right. Oh, I'm your other co-host, Carla. We are getting ready for episode 6 of our Cryptic Picnic podcast.
I love the enunciation.
I was listening back again, and I'm still not sure sometimes, so I wanted to be very sure.
Listen, I have a cryptid coming up on one of my future episode lists, and for sure I'm going to refer to that episode as a Cryptid Picnic.
So my drink of today, I have a Pepsi Max.
Ooh.
And sparkling water.
A two beverage gal. Every single time almost, you have like a drink and then you have like sparkling water next to it.
Yeah, I think it's the neurodivergence in me where I want to have three different drinks.
It's the ADHD. I'm especially like that. If I have a hot beverage, hot beverages are not thirst quenching and they make me thirsty. So if I have a hot beverage, I have to have a cold beverage beside it to also drink at the same time. Are you like that?
No. I don't know that I'm quite like that.
Okay. You're like, I'm not quite that shade of ADHD.
But I want three separate drinks and I'm totally fine if they have different textures or flavor palettes. Mm-hmm. I'm completely fine.
We're just on different sides of the same spectrum is what it is. let's do a little drink ASMR. Was that nice or what?
That was great.
I've been on a huge matcha kick. I have not been divulging into my love of strawberry beverages, and I've just got another plain old matcha.
Have you decided if you're going to dive into trying to make your own matcha drinks?
I do. At home. So my matcha, I was one of those people who forever was like, oh, I can't do matcha. It tastes like grass. But I just need to add a little bit of vanilla to it. Just a little vanilla. Mm-mm. Bada boom, bada bing. So my matcha has always got a little bit of vanilla in it, a little bit of, you know, oat milk action. And I'm really ready for this, what sounds like will be a roller coaster of an episode, which I'm still not like fully grasping what it's about. But this episode is going to come out in slightly different order than we usually do. We just settled on every other week will be a full episode. Between that, you'll get a mini-sode, but we're actually releasing two full-length episodes 2 weeks in a row. So,
ayy.
And then maybe a third full, like, I don't, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it'll be three. It'll be three in a row.
We are releasing one episode a week. You're gonna get something.
Yes, this is a huge surprise for Ivy because I had something completely different planned. And then I pulled a huge 180 and then a 360 and was like, hi, I'm doing all of that, but also a completely new subject.
Like, I know it's something to do with May Day. You mentioned Eisenhower, and I'm like, wait, literally, what is happening right now? So
I will go ahead and jump in to what is May Day and the celebration of May Day, which is so fun.
And that's the day this episode comes out. Whoa.
Yes. Oh, it's going to come out on May 1st. Happy May Day, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. So as you know, I have mentioned in a previous episode that May Day, or the 1st of May, is a European celebration that has pretty ancient origins. So May Day. Traditions of May Day include, but are not limited to, gathering flowers, green branches, the weaving of floral garlands, and possibly crowning a May Queen, and sometimes even a May King.
Slay Queen!
The setting up of a May pole.
Slay Queen boots the house down!
Yes, absolutely. The setting up of a May pole, a May tree, a May bush. People might dance around it. A May pole will sometimes and typically have different types of streamers from the top of it. So I'm sure you've seen the pictures or the depictions in different types of media of children specifically like holding the ribbon and dancing around the maypole.
Yeah, and it like wraps around or something.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And so I also needed to make a clarification because it was brought to my attention that a maypole and a midsummer pole are not the same thing. They're similar, but they're not quite the same. And I was told that they need to be separate because the maypole is in May and the midsummer pole is in June for a different thing. So I'm just clarifying for anybody who has reached out to me and told me. I stand corrected. May Day also typically has a lot of bonfires. We've talked about plenty of that before with Beltane, the different types of jumping over fires, the lighting of fires to welcome in the spring. This can be related to Valpurgis Night. So specifically in Sweden, it seems more like the celebration of May Day has shifted to both be kind of part of Valpurgis Night and some traditions to be part of Midsummer.
Uh-huh.
So the celebration of May Day isn't necessarily celebrated like this in Sweden.
Okay. So they said, we want to be different.
It's really interesting. So it's going to be kind of wild. So to reiterate of Beltane, which is typically wrapped around Ireland, Scottish, and Wales folklore and traditions. One of the four Gaelic seasons is specifically Beltane, which is May 1st. And it definitely marks the beginning of the summer season when livestock are then put out to pastures. I mean, put out in the summer pastures, not
put out
to pasture. That's an idiom, and I didn't mean it like
no,
that.
No, Carla, we're idiots.
Hey. So something I found really interesting about this particular celebration is that the special bonfires that are kindled, those flames, those smoke, that ashes, they're deemed to have protective powers. People, again, are putting their cattle out into the pastures and possibly having them walk around them, jump over them. And all of that is supposed to symbolize this idea of protection. With that said, one of the cooler pieces of this was the dousing of their household fires and then relighting those household fires from the Beltane bonfire flame.
Oh yeah, it's like is that the one that like the druids would go light and then everyone goes and
yeah.
See, I know my Beltane.
It sounds so cool, and it's all about the idea of protecting yourself and your family and your household for the year to come as by using like the fires of the community to
actually
to help.
Did you know that this is all satanic? Yeah. Yeah, Carla, sorry, but it's all satanic, yeah. Yeah.
I just think it's so interesting how much culture has, I don't want to say twisted, but used other pieces of culture in order to make it seem more familiar. And that was hugely done in the quote-unquote for the pagans.
Mm-hmm.
And you know.
We got to convert them somehow. Some of it was organic, religious synchronicity. Is that what it's called? Yeah. I always, absolutely, every single time I say that, I'm questioning, because I'm like, that sounds weird, religious synchronicity, but sometimes it was intentional, I suppose, to convert those darn pagans.
Oh, those heathens. Those
pagan heathens.
So, I talked a little bit about this in general back in episode 5. So if you haven't listened to episode 5 and you want to hear more, you should head on over there. So if we move into the Czech Republic, May Day is traditionally considered a holiday that is all about love. So May might be even considered the month of love. There are celebrations that are held in spring on April 30th. There's their own maypole that is erected, and the tradition possibly connected to Beltane. There are bonfires, similar to Valpurgis Night, public holiday. I'm over here doing a dance, so I'm moving my hands. So I'm like, what came from where? Let's find out.
Yeah.
So on May 1st in the Czech Republic, it is known that couples that are in love will kiss under the blooming trees.
Ooh.
And this is not quite an old habit. This actually seems to most likely originate around the late 19th to the 20th century. And it's pretty much seems to have like a connection. There's a pretty strong connection to a famous poem that was written during that time. This is usually done under the beautiful cherry or apple or birch tree blossoms.
Ooh, romantic.
It sounds so romantic. And this is actually another fun little thing. And the reason I wanted to throw this in here is that there's a Swedish saying that is to meet the spring in Prague.
Oh.
And my husband has no idea where this came from. He just knows that he's heard it for forever. Prague is the capital of the Czech Republic. And so me and my husband actually had a chance to go to Prague during spring, several years back. And it was absolutely gorgeous. There are flowering trees everywhere. It is wildly beautiful.
Did you kiss under a tree? Is that a yes? Ew! Ew! Gross! Carla and her husband standing under a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
It was pretty great. It was also quite interesting because we were going through one of the huge gardens and there was just a little kid that was lost from his mom. So there was a police officer there, but there's just a tiny child that like ran up to us and like we could not communicate with each other.
Aww.
And I was like, another adult, help
Code
me.
Adam. Yeah.
So in Germany, in the rural regions of Germany, it is the celebrations, obviously, of pagan origins, the night before May Day, bonfires, all of the things I've mentioned. Dancing your way into May.
I've heard about, I don't know if you have this in your notes, because it is like German specific. I think it's like, oh, somewhere, I can't remember which region actually, but it's like where my ancestry was from. And I read that they had a very specific May Day, like maypole tradition where the men and like neighboring communities try and steal each other's maypoles.
Ooh, that's fun.
It's so fun. And it's like, it's, like, super hardcore. They have, like, people, like, there will be, like, guards posted out, and your goal is to try and, like, sneakily get their maypole, and it's, like, a whole big thing to, like, steal someone else's, and it sounds so fun.
That sounds a little scandalous.
Oh, my God, it's, oh, my God, they're a bunch of criminals.
They sound like frat boys.
I want to partake in it so bad.
Like, trying to steal, like, the, What is the trope in every movie? It's like, oh, the football boys are trying to steal the old trophy from the other team. Or like,
that's, yeah, similar vibes. Yeah.
No, but that is really interesting, and I think it goes to show you just how many different types of traditions based on the area or region that people live in that there could be. On May 1st, in a different part in Germany, it's celebrated by delivering of a maypole. So the trees would then be covered in streamers and decorations. And as I was reading through some of this, it sounds also like it could have been a potted plant of some kind or even a bouquet of flowers. But the point was, is that your love interest is supposed to deliver them to your house. And typically it was from the males to the females.
Ooh, that'll win the gals over. No, I want a full-sized maypole delivered to my front door. I don't want no bouquet of flowers. Give me a full-sized, like, 20-30 foot maypole, please.
It is common to do this in the dead of night because the whole goal is to keep some sort of your identity and not like anonymous.
Ooh.
Sounds like it could be a little odd, but you know,
hey, secret admirers, you know.
Hopefully secret admirers all have good intentions. It's common to stick a heart in the window or in front of the place of the person, even under their doormat. And then in the leap years, it's actually the responsibility of the women to place the maypole. Switches it up.
Whoa, a little switcheroo.
Which, there's also a tradition in Ireland about the leap year. So women can then propose to their significant others on leap years.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Because it's... Okay, it actually looks like it was from Irish monks who took the tradition to Scotland.
Oh.
Where it was made into law that women could propose during leap years and that they must wear a red petticoat while proposing. Ooh.
How?
And the refusal would then result in a fine.
Oh. Okay. So if the guy says no.
Okay.
She has to pay a fine? Someone has to pay a fine? Or does he pay the fine? This is...
Ooh, that's a good question. It didn't specify
but someone
who pays the fine.
Paying up.
I feel like she would have to pay.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So
if you got a maypole on May 1st from your secret admirer and it was covered in white streamers, what do you think that meant?
White usually is a symbolic of purity. So...
In this case, it means it's dislike.
Oh, wait. So is that like a diss? Like you send it to someone with that to say, I don't like you?
It sounds like hate mail. Like you just went through all this work to send someone hate mail.
You know what, though? Am I petty enough to perhaps have partaken in that? Yes, yes, I am. Oh, yes. Wait, can we do this? Can I send people I don't like a maypole of whites with white streamers?
I mean, I guess you could possibly have anything delivered.
But I'll send it with like a Wikipedia link explaining what it means so they know that it means I don't like them.
In Germany, May Day was not established as a public holiday until Nazi Germany declared that May 1st was National Workers' Day, and that happened in 1933.
Uh-huh.
So there was many political parties and unions that hosted activities related to work and employment during that particular time. As we move in to back to Sweden, so these traditional festivals, again, have kind of mushed into both Valpurgis Night and into Midsummer. I find similarities within some of the different traditions between these, all of these different celebrations. But the celebration of May 1st in Sweden typically focuses more on workers' rights, normally with marches and demonstrations, because it is International Workers' Day. International Workers' Day. We have officially entered into this wild history of some politics, into some intrigue, into some true crime. Like, this is about to have it all. There is all sorts of wildness about to happen.
So, we're going from, like, May Day, like, bonfires, send flowers to your lover, kiss under a flowering tree, and now we're getting into some real deep, like, societal political stuff?
Yes. Because I did not realize just how important May Day was and how many other countries celebrate International Workers' Rights Day, because the United States, our Labor Day, is in September.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember talking about this in school. I don't remember this being a conversation that I ever had regarding workers' rights. So, but I think that when I start explaining this to you, it's gonna be very wild how real and important this day really is. So I just wanted to share that with all the people who don't know.
Which included me until you just told me this.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you buckled up?
I am buckled up. My drink is ready. Let's dive into what sounds like a potentially depressing topic.
Well, I don't know that there's some stuff, but if we go back in time, once again, I feel like every time I have a little thing, I'm like, let's go back in time, like, join my magic school bus.
Yeah, this is a time-traveling podcast, so yeah.
Time-traveling podcast. Like, I'm already 7 hours ahead, so why not just go back in time?
You've 300 traveled, years? Wait, did you travel to the future, or did I travel to the past? Wait, I would say America's just in the past compared to Sweden. Yeah.
Okay, well. Let's talk about this. So we have the First Industrial Revolution.
Woohoo!
Back in 1740 and 1840, which, if you did not know, is the period of time of global transition. The human economy was working more widespread, becoming more efficient, becoming more stable in manufacturing processes. And all of that was after the
archaeology?
I knew that there was going to have to be some word that I was going to get tripped up on.
There, we always do. We always do.
Agricultural revolution.
Not archaeology. I mean, but also relating to the ground. So
1840 was around the end of the First Industrial Revolution. And so in 1889, there was a Marxist International Socialist Congress that met in Paris, and they were establishing the Second International, which was a association that was after the International Working Men's Association. Now, this particular group of people, again, were focused more on Marxism. Marxism is a very complicated conversation. They have classes, they have tons of books. So I'm just going to give the most basic definition of what Marxism is for the explanation of May Day.
Ooh.
So this is interested in exploring and explaining social phenomena within a given society. And the focus is by analyzing material conditions and economic activities. So, those economic activities and material conditions are the basic material needs that are required to fulfill humans' most basic needs.
Uh-huh.
So, essentially, Marxism was later developed by their followers to form the basis of what we know as communism.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also a theory or a system of sociological organization where property is normally owned by the community, and each person then contributes and receives according to their ability and their needs. This is an adopted theory that is the basic foundation of some modern countries and groups. So this is just all kind of what's going on with those buzzwords.
Yeah. You're not a commie, are you? these dang commies. Someone talks about, like, I want our schools to be better funded, and you've got someone being like, oh, these communists.
Well, so it's such a time, and it's society is complicated.
Yes, oh yes it is. It's complicated, and everything is too polarized, and, you know,
it's gonna be really interesting when I really dive into this rabbit hole of history. So back in 1889, at this Paris meeting, there was a conversation. What was something they needed to adopt a resolution for? A quote-unquote great international demonstration.
Okay.
In support of the working class demands for...
Drumroll, please!
The 8-hour workday. So the basis of May Day is all about multiple demonstrations about the 8-hour workday, which is the basic foundation of lots of countries,
yeah,
working classes right now. It's so wild to me.
That's not the, like, twist I was expecting for, like, learning about May Day, that it's about, like, workers' rights.
It's about workers' rights!
Workers' rights.
So this entire story is so wild. From moving from the Industrial Revolution right after the Civil War, and so in the 1860s, this is when these conversations really started regarding labor within the United States, the social emancipation, especially in the working class. So one of these leaders from Massachusetts, he concluded that the best hope for this, instead of plunging away from the sunrise to the sunset, was to have an 8-hour workday.
Mm.
Across the nation, these followers formed these little leagues and these organized rallies and these parades, all for this cause of just getting an 8-hour workday.
Yeah, they're like, hey, I don't want to work from sun up till literally sundown. I don't think that's asking for too much.
The irony of this just being like, oh, this was just workers. They wanted to work from 10 hours to 8 hours. No, there were some places that were literally making their workers work 12 hours, 16 hours a day. Like, that was still happening.
Yeah, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. No one wants to work these days. Good. Sorry, I'm gonna mock a lot of those, like, cringe blue-collar... boomers in this episode.
Well, and that's crazy. That's also so wild. After I was reading this, I was like, so many of these people who also are like, oh, these people aren't working hard enough. I'm like, people literally fought and died. So some people could have literally breaks and not have to work their fingers, yeah, to the bone and not have to die in, like, factories because of...
We're not designed to work that much. And for most of human history, like, did we have to put in a lot of work for daily things like food and drink and harvesting crops, taking care of animals? Yeah, like, we were, of course, still working. But there was also, like, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, humans also had long periods of rest, long days off of just relaxation. Like, after the harvest was done, you had, you know, just weeks of just kind of relaxing. It's like, well, we've done most of the work, and, you know, like, that's what we're meant to do. We're not supposed to work.
But it also makes sense to me why in Swedish in Swedish culture why there is so much, I don't know what word I'm looking for, freedom around summertime. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like I always loved summer because it meant that I wasn't in school. It meant that I could go to the pool. It meant that I could go to the movies.
Yeah.
But in Sweden, people literally are allowed to take weeks off of work and just go somewhere with their family.
And that's how it should be everywhere. Like, I'm sorry, but I worked years full-time at Hobby Lobby, which is the literal devil. And it's like, I was lucky if I could get 1 week off a year. If I could have 1 week off for a vacation, I was lucky and happy. And that's not right. is not right.
It's been really interesting as somebody who is from the United States attempting to get into the workforce of Sweden. I actually did just get a part-time job, so yay.
Yay!
But I've been applying for jobs all over the place, and it is so wild to see the differences in the job requirements from jobs that are from the United States versus jobs that are anywhere in Europe.
Yeah, I imagine.
Vacation time, sick time is different. Like, if your kid is sick, you're allowed to figure out how to work remotely or to stay home. Like, there's so much less guilt.
Don't fathers also get, like, paternity leave, which is unheard of in America?
Yes, they can. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, my husband's father actually got paternity leave with all of his kids.
See, and we don't get that here. Like, here in America, you're lucky if, as a, like, new mom, if you can get 1 week off of maternity leave, and then they're like, okay, back to work, back on your feet all day, we want you to work that full 8-hour shift, like, and then the fathers get diddly squat with their new babies, so, oh my god. This is a topic that gets me heated, Carla.
Well, it's about to get booming.
Okay.
So, all of these different, I said little leagues, but that's also not quite what I meant. I just meant groups of people, you know, in league together, organizing rallies in support of this cause. And this was, like, really galvanizing the American labor movement. The number of unions in cities, such as Chicago, doubled in less than a year. And the statewide convention of the Grand 8-Hour League, they met in Chicago in 1866.
Uh-huh.
This was to push legislation in Illinois. This was really to be like, hi, people, listen to us. We want you to enact this work system. So this strategy actually seemed really successful. Because on March 2nd of the next year, in 1867... Governor Oglesby signed America's first 8-hour law into effect.
Yay, that's good. Now let's keep getting better.
This sounds great, right? Like, it just sounds super cool. Except many Chicago employers just didn't want to do it. They decided that they were going to fight this 8-hour mandate. They believed that this law violated the sacred liberty of contract, which is the right for employers and employees to agree to terms of work that is free from the governmental interference. It affected that so much that even though the workers were the ones who asked for this, the employers were like, no.
They're like, no, sorry, we want to keep underpaying you and making you work literally all day.
So when this law took effect on May 1st of that year.
Mayday!
Many large Chicago employers simply just refused. They just refused to comply with any of these demands. And all the employees were very much considered and required to work their customary 10 to 12 or more hours a day. It got even worse because the police did not aid the workers.
I know no one can see my face, but my face just, I feel like if disappointment could be a facial expression, which I suppose it is. That's my face right now.
The way your face fell when I said, that sounds great, right? And then I was like, but it didn't work. And you're like, no.
But they just, I mean, it's just like when we like ended slavery and then you had Southern plantations who were like, no, I'm going to keep my slaves until you force me. And like when we like ended segregation and then all these schools were like, well, we're still not going to allow black students here unless you force us to. And oh my god.
Well, and I mean, the story of Ruby Bridges is just wild. The fact that this little girl went to school being like yelled at schools, had things thrown at her, and I was like, she was a child.
And like when you look at those images of her and all of these angry white school kids and people like faculty around her like yelling at her, like that some of those are like our great grandparents that are still alive. So
we are very passionate about human rights. Look at us.
Yeah.
So the police aided in suppressing all of the worker unrest, and the timid politicians of that time in the governor's office and down just they just refused to enforce this. So all of this hard-fought legislation, this victory, was pretty much deemed meaningless. Such a great time.
Yeah.
I think it's such a professional way that businesses would have had to change their entire work structure and find like other employees to cover these times or just have a different pay. And they just were like, yeah, we just don't want to do that.
It's called having a morning shift and having an evening shift. Whoa, crazy, crazy.
It's pretty well, I don't know if you can see it, but I think it's pretty safe to say that labor tensions started building up.
Yeah.
Over the next 20 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
When these rich businesses seem to get richer, being able to afford all of these private, expensive things, getaways, bougie clubs, summer homes, expensive traded goods, like all the while these workers were still being exploited, they were still feeling strained, and
tale as old as time.
So poignant. Such a poignant topic.
Great.
So then in 1886, a few years before where I originally mentioned, 1886, on May 1st, here we are again.
Hey, May Day.
There were labor demonstrations all over the U.S., and their entire focus was the 8-hour workday. But this was especially happening in Chicago. Huge numbers of workers. This entire situation has been known as the Great Upheaval, because this day just was so, there were so many people on a march, just on strike from their jobs, like walking out.
Oh, I just like Googled like pictures of it. And yeah, I'm seeing like old black and white photographs of like women holding banners that say like demand a 30-hour work week and we shall fight until we win, better work conditions. Wow. That's just crazy how long we've been literally protesting for the exact same thing that we're still protesting for today.
The rally on this particular day began peacefully and, of course, in support of the 8-hour workday. But a couple of days later, there would be a situation.
I hope people can hear, like, the birds through my mic. I have my window open. And it's very springtime outside right now. As you're telling me this, like, very infuriating topic of workers not getting their rights.
On the 3rd of May, so it has been a few days. This has been going on for a few days now. A situation at the McCormick Harvesting Machine Company, which it seems like at the time it was called McCormick Reaping, Reaper Co. or, like, Works. Mm-hmm. On the afternoon of May 3rd, a speaker spoke to thousands of workers that were near this plant's gate. And then the factory bell sounds, and it was almost like signaling to all the people. It's obviously the end of the shift, but it was almost like on cue. Many of these workers decided to hurry off and heckle all the replacement workers who were taking their places right now. A patrol wagon of about 75 police officers rushed in to protect all of these replacement workers. And some of the hecklers began throwing things, which included rocks. The police responded with gunfire, killing at least two and throughout everything injuring many, many other people.
Okay, and the sad thing about that is, like, I can see why you have these people protesting that are angry at these people that are now taking this job and just replacing them. But at the same time, I can sympathize with how absolutely dirt poor and desperate some people were to have a job to support a family, that they would step in and take those positions. All around terrible situation, and no one deserved to die.
Well, and even like on that, I will say that I know that I've seen worker strikes and I've read about worker strikes. Again, I've been reading a lot where people will actually kill those replacements. Like people who are striking will riot and they will attack the people who are replacing them. And there's like a name for them. They're called scabs.
Yeah, because we had that during the like Hollywood protests that were going on.
Yeah, like the all the strikes, the writer strike, and then the actor strike in solidarity, and that very much turned into a lot of the production staff in general for a lot of entertainment. They were also going on strike. So I don't know that any of that ended up leading to a riot or gunfire or death, though.
Yeah, I don't think it got quite that.
I don't know
severe.
That it got that aggressive. Yeah. I saw some like knocked over coffees, but there was some agreements that happened with that.
Yeah.
So, two people killed, a bunch of people injured. A lot of people were afraid to even come forward from this because if this was a situation, and whatever the cause of the situation, if you were injured and you came forward, then that might have meant that you might get in trouble too. And it just, so the number of people who were possibly injured during that time is also like kind of up in the air, but there was lots of people there. There were thousands of workers at this place. Who knows how many people actually got hurt. Completely outraged. The different leaders of this time who were really pushing for the 8-hour workday, the organizers created these leaflets. And it was a motion that would hold a rally at 7:30 the following night. So the place would be Haymarket, which is a famous square space that's in... Not square space like the company, like a space... a square...
A space that is square-shaped.
That people would go to, the Haymarket. And so they had a ton of handbills printed. They were both printed in German and English. They were promoting this rally. And so on the night of May 4th, at the Haymarket Square, the rally was held. It began at 5:30 in the evening. Instead of at 7:30, it began earlier. And about 2,000 to 3,000 workers attended, which was actually a little bit of a disappointment to the organizers because they wanted more people to go. But, you know, the show must go on. So speakers then spoke for several hours after that. I am very much just like dwindling down into sentences what happened in this particular moment, because there is so much information. I found a couple of different law websites and they had these cases and they had so much information. I can always go back and talk more about this later if you really want me to do a deep dive. But I am gonna skim a little bit so that I can like move forward. There's just so much information. Multiple speakers spoke for the next few hours. The first few speakers were denouncing these acts of violence and really stating that they wanted to shed light on these incidences and on the workers and on the situation and just completely push for what they're asking for in the first place, which is better working conditions for workers.
Mm-hmm.
So then the last speaker went on. Around 10, he made a few statements. And some of those statements were kind of urging on the side of a little bit more aggressive. It was to go forth and throttle the law.
Yeah.
Over the course of this particular, of these speeches, there was also the chance of rain. So people started like dwindling away during this time. So when he went on stage, there was maybe a handful, like hundreds of people instead of thousands of people.
Yeah.
There were two detectives in this crowd and they rushed off to tell the police. Of course.
Okay.
So the lawmen were then prepared. And they marched on Haymarket Square to break up this rally. And there are literal quotes, like actual quotes, essentially being like, "I command you the name of the people, the state of Illinois, immediately and peaceably to divorce."
Peaceably divorce, please. Well, I say,
by golly.
Oh, by golly, I say you peaceably divorce now.
So essentially the speaker who was on stage was like, okay, we'll go. And before anybody could actually leave, something was thrown into the crowd. And that was a bomb.
Oh, okay.
It exploded, and it caused absolute panic and chaos. So police were wounded. They fell to the ground. Officers began firing into this crowd. Shots continued to fire for 2 to 3 more minutes. They would empty their rounds, reload their guns, and there were so many of them that they could just keep doing this. And so finally, workers ran in every direction. People were being chased. Like, people were getting beat up. And this riot only lasted 5 minutes.
Wow.
But it ended up leaving 7 police officers dead and an unknown number of civilians dead as well. 60 more officers received serious wounds, which at first I was like, this sounds like a lot.
Because I was just going to ask, like, why didn't we have numbers for the cops? But I guess that kind of, I don't know, makes sense. But it, so people like today have been able to look back and kind of guesstimate.
But they had a way better understanding and numbers for the police officers than they did for the number of people who were at this rally. And that is by design. So what historians have found is that they killed at least 4 of the rally goers and they wounded possibly up to many as 70 people.
Do you think they just wanted to garner sympathy more for the police? So like, oh my gosh, look at all these officers dead by the hands of these awful protesters.
Yes. And the reason why they seem to have a different number or have an unknown number is because this became a huge issue. This started being put in newspapers. People, of course, there was a bunch of other people dead, which was a huge issue. And all of this, of these heathens.
Yeah, darn heathens. Can we just like rename this to be like the heathen podcast?
Or like the, because everything I kept reading kept talking about like the red panic and like commies. And so those commies. Ugh.
that's us, those darn commies.
So, and the reason, the other reason why some of this stuff is known is because it was also published in newspapers, both the Chicago's and like New York Times. So there was lots of articles all around.
Okay.
Let's see. Demonstrators began firing at the police, who then returned fire. That was in the New York Times. There was a Chicago Tribune that was an anonymous police officer quoted, "A very large number of police were wounded by each other's revolvers, and it was every man for himself. And while some got 2 or 3 squares away, the rest emptied their revolvers, some into each other."
So a lot of their injuries were them literally, like, accidentally shooting each other?
So there was speculation. Again, I found a couple of historians who talked about this as well. Seven policemen was originally thought, but again, the historians say, they argue that it's kind of impossible to rule out lethal friendly fire.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also kind of impossible to rule out armed protesters at the same time. So
probably a bit of both.
Probably a bit of both. And people were, again, very afraid to come forward and go to hospitals about their injuries because they were afraid to be associated with the situation. So they just kind of found aid wherever they could. So do you want me to go into the trial?
Buckle up!
I'm gonna do a really... What's the word I'm looking for?
Are you gonna cliff notes this?
Yes, I'm cliff notesing it.
Okay. Cliff notesing.
So Chicago papers basically cried out in vengeance against mostly immigrant workers that were have believed to inspire the Haymarket riots. So there was a very heavy racial motivation against the people of the rally, and that was also pushed. Even though it was workers' rights, it was specifically then deemed a racial issue. Out of the people who were there, out of the defendants, there was 8 of them, and 5 of them were immigrants that were born in Germany. One of them was a U.S.-born citizen, but of German descent. The other 2 were born in the U.S. and in England, and both of them had British heritage. And so on top of that, everything was starting to get connected with the murder of police officers. The newspapers can okay, so this, I'm gonna say a quote from a newspaper.
Okay.
From the Chicago Times.
Okay, is it really nice?
It's pretty bad. They urged, quote, "Let us whip these Slavic wolves back to the European dens from which they issue or in some way exterminate them." That was a quote in a newspaper.
Slavic wolves into the European den?
So racist.
Oh, okay. I've never heard that's
it's wild. And then just from there, people kept getting jumped. People were breaking in, like, police officers were breaking into people's houses and trashing their houses, looking for any sign of anybody who could be even slightly connected to any of this. Beating, threatening people, including homes and offices.
Nice. And so,
yeah, I mean, they're really judging these people for being, like, anarchists, and then instead they're, like, trashing everything as they go
you,
apart.
You destructive anarchists, let me destroy everything while trying to investigate you.
So this was clearly brought up, like, this was a conspiracy. Everything this was going to happen, like, between the rallying and between everything else, like, this was planned. And so through the trial, through this investigation, they investigated a number of bomb-making materials at one of the premises, which, of course, led to the arrest, and he decided to cooperate. He decided to cooperate, and he was identified as the bomb maker, but he was not charged, which I found really interesting in all of this, because multiple other people were charged, but though the people who were charged tended to be the people who were being outspoken and organizing a lot of the rallying. So I found it really interesting that the person who supposedly created the bomb was not charged.
Yeah. Okay.
There was one person, who was suspected as the bomb thrower and was arrested twice early on, but then released. And it became super apparent, like a week later, that they played such a significant role in this event, and he had fled the country.
All right.
Yeah, he was like, peace out, I'm gone. Like, have fun.
Was he never, I guess if they fled the country, probably wasn't brought in for justice or anything?
There's so many names, and because I wanted to kind of synopsis everything, I did skip over some of their names. I don't think he was ever brought in.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, some of these men were present during the rally itself, but some of them were not even there. Like, one of the people who was arrested was speaking at a completely different rally. He was not even there.
Oh, okay.
And that is proven. There are hundreds of testimonies of him being somewhere else. But supposedly he had a direct tie and he was part of this. So that's why he was arrested.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
One of the other people who was arrested was at home playing cards.
Okay. I'm going to assume that some of these people, it was like, we think they might be a dirty, evil commie. Let's try and tie them in as well or something.
I think that just any way that they could possibly tie something together, on top of the fact that they wanted to really make a statement for the fact that people had died. And mm-hmm. this was an issue that had now international, like, England was talking about this. Like, this was known in Canada at some point. I'm going to talk about in a little bit how this movement affected multiple countries in South America and in Mexico and multiple countries in Europe. So this was huge. It was being reported on. This trial was so public that's also why there's so much information out there that I had no idea about until I looked into it.
Yeah, I've never, as a member of the American working class, I had no knowledge of any of this. So
the judge who presided over their case displayed open hostility to the defendants. He constantly ruled for the prosecution, and he pretty much just failed to maintain decorum.
Yeah.
He completely refused to, he refused the motion to try the defendant separately. And on top of that, finding a jury for this extremely public case was incredibly difficult. It lasted, like, just that process lasted 3 weeks. Nearly 1,000 people were called in. Union members and anyone who expressed sympathy towards socialism were immediately dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of this, 12 were seated, most of whom confessed to prejudice against the defendants.
So you couldn't have prejudice that's, like, in support of them and be on the jury, but you can have prejudice against them and be on the jury.
Yeah, that seems fair.
A fair trial. I got out of jury duty one time by saying I would be prejudiced against it.
Aww.
Well, it was.
Would you have been, or would you just say that?
I think I would have been. So it was just before I had my gallbladder removed. And it was actually a case of, they were saying, medical, malpractice. And it was someone who had their gallbladder removed and then had complications. And so I just, like, raise my hand and I'm like, hi, I'm actually having that same procedure done in the same city through the same medical network. I don't know that I can, like, hold my thoughts and opinions back on this. And they were like, okay, bye.
They're like, juror 8, please leave.
Well, no, I also had my aunt had her gallbladder removed, and she did have complications. They nicked her liver when they removed it. And so I brought that up too. I was like, I also had an aunt who did suffer from malpractice. Thankfully, I didn't. I've been fine. But that's my experience on a jury panel, which was brief. And I was like, okay, bye, see ya. And I got paid $6 for being there that day. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
But you've been better with your stuff, right? Like you after you got your gallbladder.
My surgeon was fantastic, and now I can eat. It's so great. Eating is so fun. I love eating food. Let's get back to this trial.
So I just wanted to explain some of that because this case was extremely prejudiced. Like there was already a social understanding against the defendants on their fair trial.
So fair.
And this was another bit of motion that I was like, whoa, wait a second. This has such a weird connection to Sweden.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
So the jury themselves heard testimony between 118 people. That included 54 members of the Chicago Police Department directly and multiple defendants, four defendants to be exact. One of the defendant's brothers claimed that he thought there was evidence that linked the Pinkertons to the bomb.
Okay.
This was a huge, reflected, and widespread belief among the people who were striking. So who are the Pinkertons, you may ask? That is such a great question.
Do tell!
The Pinkertons is a private security guard and detective agency that was established in 1850. It was in the United States by a Scottish-born American. And Scottish-born American and a Chicago attorney. This is also referred to as the Northwestern Police Agency, which later became Pinkerton & Co. And finally, the Pinkerton National Detective Agency. So, stay with me. So following the Civil War, which was not so long ago, the Pinkertons began conducting operations against organized labor, aka union strikes. They were union busters. So these companies between the 19th and the 20th centuries would hire the Pinkerton agency to infiltrate unions, supply guards to keep strikers and suspected unionists out of these factories. They would literally recruit goon squads to intimidate workers. There was like multiple strikes. The Homestead Strike of 1982. There were agencies that were called as reinforcements and strike breakers. But how is it connected to Sweden? That's a great question.
The question on all our minds.
So obviously, this is not a great look, you know, especially with all the workers and them being like, hey, we want better rights. Why are you doing this?
So, and then instead of like giving them better rights, they're putting in so much work to like these other investigators and goons that they are sending out to like do all this stuff.
They are literally like these companies are literally buying company goons to go out and like make people afraid of them.
But they couldn't, like, pay people more or improve work conditions or anything. Right. They can pay for this kind of stuff.
Correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. So, it makes sense if you're evil and wealthy, I guess.
So there's a whole different rabbit hole of the Pinkertons and the different strikes that they were involved in. But in the 20th century, the Pinkerton rebranded itself as, like, a personal security and risk management firm. The company has continued to exist in various forms through present day and is currently a division of the Swedish security company Securitas AB.
Woohoo! So now you get to deal with them.
So there are so many companies around here that use Securitas, and it's just a security firm. Like, different places will have entire security systems, and they have a Securitas, and they'll just like send someone out to go to like, oh hey, you need to go check this out, and like, oh hey. And so multiple times a night, like, the Securitas will do rounds of like the different stores and like the school, the different schools that are around the area. And so I just think that that's so wild that the Pinkerton company has been absorbed by Securitas.
Yeah.
And Securitas has been around since like the early 1900s, and so they did like absorb other companies. And is a multi-international group, and they are specifically based in Stockholm.
Okay.
I just was like, that is so wild to me.
Yeah, that's bonkers. Hey, full circle.
I found multiple websites that had this trial in pretty good detail. So if you wanted me to really deep dive, again, I would be so happy to share. Just going forward, 7 people were arrested and they were charged with the crime and they were sentenced to death. So,
okay.
The 8th defendant was sentenced to 15 years in prison for provoking outrage in the labor and workers movements. So
they should die. So they should die.
So then we come back to this meeting in Paris in 1889. And why was May 1st chosen? Well, they wanted a great international demonstration, specifically in support of the working class.
Woohoo!
And what better day than the day that all of this happened, and that's May 1st.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel a little differently about May Day, especially like as you're like talking about this, I'll sit here and like Google photos from like May Day protests and seeing like grainy, gritty, old black and white photos from May Day protests decades ago, and then still seeing like modern day pictures of May Day protests. It's like, oh, so not much has really changed that much, I see.
So
got me feeling some type of way.
Well, more than 160 countries celebrate their Labor Day and have May 1st as a holiday. So just a reminder that your workers' rights are important.
Are they? Well, okay, important to us, but important to the companies we work for?
They should be. They should be.
They should be.
So that, I did have another wonderful little tidbit, just a small one. So, USA, why, out of all of the countries that celebrate May Day, why does the United States does not? What's up with that?
I'm sure they really want to hush anything like that, because we have states right now that are passing laws to allow literal child labor again. So, of course, we don't want people protesting for labor rights.
I mean, isn't that the joke, that the children yearn for the mines?
The children yearn for the mines. I do have a nephew that's the most high energy kid ever. And sometimes I look at him and I'm like, I need, like, this kid should be cleaning the chimneys. Like, man, he'd be scaling those chimneys, getting them so clean. But like, then it's, I have to remind myself, oh no, like, we have people actually trying to make children work again. Full-time jobs. These states want kids to, these, like, there's like a southern state that's like, I think children should be able to work full-time jobs. Oh my gosh. So that's how we're doing over here, Carla.
Well, I know that May has Memorial Day, so maybe that will help fill that void.
Yeah.
Is that not it?
I think what kind of sucks is so many other countries' citizens, they are A, just like better off, you know, financially. They're not living as paycheck to paycheck as we are, but there's also like protections for things like protesting. But like in America, everyone can't just get up and leave and protest for days on end to make change, because that's how people will lose their jobs. And we are people living paycheck to paycheck and or in debt. And we literally just aren't a country, like, people just can't afford to organize like that, like other countries can.
So, you know what would help with that?
Do tell, Carla, do tell.
Unions.
We love unions. Well,
so the whole idea of a union is that the union is there to help make sure that the worker is not exploited in their job from their company. So that includes a lot of things, and that includes agreements across the board in the United States. That is very limited to only certain groups of people have unions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
for people that have made it this far into the episode, like, we do describe ourselves as a podcast with cozy conversations because that's so much of what we're having. We're having conversations. And this conversation just happens to be one that's a wee bit infuriating because, you know, I think a lot of our listeners are in the good old US of A with me.
So. Well, and it's me, you, and Mothman. And I don't think Mothman would treat me like this.
Oh, yes. I got stressed out, so I'm holding a Mothman plushie right now. And look, his wings have magnets in them, so they close and he hides his face. Like he's
that's
shy.
Precious.
It's really cute. Anyways.
Yes, we have Memorial Day, we have Veterans Day, and we also have what is officially May 1st in the US, and that is Law Day. That's right. Law Day.
Oh.
It was declared by President Dwight D. Eisenhower to declare May 1st Law Day, and it's dedicated to the principles of government under law. It's now celebrate, like, Labor Day specifically is celebrated in September instead of in May, and it is celebrated in May for 160 countries all over the world, except for the US, which moved it.
My jaw's on the floor that we're like, oh, for everyone else, May 1st is about, like, the working class unionizing, all of these protests that have gone on throughout time of people trying to get better working conditions. And then Eisenhower's like, let's make it Law Day. Follow the laws, everybody. Don't break the law.
So I was really curious as to why. Like, why would this be a thing? Why would he want to exclude the United States from this clearly widely And at that time was a widely celebrated day. And the biggest thing that I found was basically the Red Scare. So in former Soviet Union, May Day was occasion to honor workers' contributions with giant parades and the Red Square. It's the, you know, tradition has dwindled. But also Nazi Germany in 1933 declared May 1st National Worker Rights Day, and so I think that in this way President Eisenhower was trying to maybe separate some of that idea, keep the essence of it,
yeah,
and move Labor Day, but maybe distance from association.
Okay, I suppose that checks out a little bit. I think it's funny that, like, Labor Day in America is like, hey, Labor Day, thank you, working class, but then most people still have to work Labor Day. That's always fun.
Well, and it's really interesting here because it is technically a holiday, but it's called a Red Day, which is like, you know how Sundays in Missouri, you have kind of different rules, yeah, about things?
Yeah.
Workers' rights.
Yeah. USA! USA! USA!
Workers' rights matter. And you matter. Remember that.
Yeah. A message from Cryptic Picnic Podcast.
You matter.
All right.
So I don't have an outro for this, so until next time.
Okay,
Until next time.
Anyone that's made it an hour 30 minutes into this episode, like,
I will probably cut this a little bit.
Yeah.
I might save some of this for, like, a bonus, like, a little mini bonus episode where it's just, like, us talking.
Oh my god, it's gonna be 10 minutes of, like, blooper reel of us Googling random stuff at the end of the episode. It's gonna be great.
It's just like,
yep. Like, what is the Missouri liquor laws again? Typing. All right. I should probably stop recording, shouldn't I?
This was great. As always, thank you for listening. We invite you to post some of your own fascinating folklore or delicious recipes for a treat in the comments. If you leave us a scary or a silly review wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us. Follow us on all socials. We are Cryptid Picnic Podcast on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
You can also follow me on my own Instagram at it's Ivy Boyd and TikTok at Ivy _ Boyd. I promise it's a good time for even more spooky content. And join us next time for another installment of Cryptic Picnic, where we will bring you more stories of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Join us, or else.
This podcast is researched, produced, and edited by both Ivy and Carla. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.